gave me 2 eggs. So tomorrow I got nothing.
I really believe that everybody should be born poor. 1 week of their life. 1 week.
As you see, I'm in a wheelchair. I was hit by a train 10 years ago. And a year ago, I was hit by a truck.
There's a feeling in the pit of your stomach the first several nights that you're out there when you realize you actually are in a place where you got nowhere to go.
How do you like being at the shelter?
Kind of good. And I like it when we had our own bed, different. And when we get our new house, I'll be so happy when I have my own room.
This may surprise a lot of people, but in the last school year, all of our schools here in Butte County, there's 14 different school districts, identified about 900 students, children and youth who were in homeless situations during the course of the school year.
Welcome to the Without a Roof program, where we expose and remedy poverty, the worst form of violence. All right, Guillermo Mash here for the KZFR 90.1 FM Without a Roof radio program for July 2016. Good time to say that this is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, foothills, and beyond. And last but not least, opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, nor possibly the volunteers, other than me. Most of these opinions will probably represent myself. So I'm your host this month, as I am every other month. The themes are harm reductions and solutions to homelessness and master leased programs. We're really blessed. We're going to be introducing some folks here. We got a panel of four different people in the audience, in the studio. We've got Jennifer Carvello from Skywales. We got Bob Trouch from Chat. We got Ed Mayer, Housing Authority of Butte County, and Charlie, a wonderful, wonderful young artist and mom who lives in Stairways Programming within their harm reduction program. And we also literally have within this program some really cool pre-recorded segments with Gabriella Duncan from Seattle, Washington, highlighting harm reduction programs on the street. And we're going to listen to Billy Abernathy, man, posthumously. Billy is a friend I knew quite well, 1961 to 2016. He died as an alcoholic, living homeless, chronically homeless, hit by a car on Esplanade. They had a wonderful, wonderful service for Billy. And we have just a couple of clips. One clip is just poignant for me. He asked me to film it. He literally said, I want you to get this poem out there. And the family had reached out to me. And they literally had it as the ending of his memorial. And then we're also going to have a neat piece. KALW gave us permission to air a piece. They had June 29th on my birthday. They did this whole blanket coverage for homelessness. And they gave me permission to air a piece on navigation centers. It's the process they have in San Francisco that's harm reduction based. They go around with their HUT team, they call them, homeless outreach teams, and they get people off the streets that really need some help, and they attach them to housing. So the idea is they stay in the navigation center, or they open more navigation centers to get the capacity. They're looking at opening 5. They've got 2 open. And at some point, the idea is to get them into housing. So with no further ado, I'd like to introduce our guest. I'd like you to start, Jennifer. We're going to go around the room, and just a couple of minutes about yourself and your organization and some of the new exciting things you're doing.
Hey, Bill. Thanks so much for having us today. I'm Jen Carvalho. I'm the CEO of Skyway House. We've been doing substance abuse treatment in Northern California since 1993. We say 23 years of second chances. I am very excited to offer residential, outpatient, and sober living through our agency. Mm-hmm. And I think the most exciting thing that's happened recently is that we opened a 16-bed detox facility in Chico, which we have been sorely needing for many years. And so it's very exciting to be able to offer that level of care to people who are newly seeking treatment.
Hi, I'm Bob Trouch. I'm on the board of the local ACLU, also of Dorotea Pathways, and I'm one of the founding members of CHAT, Chico Housing Action Team. We're an all-volunteer organization. Our main goal and focus is to build tiny homes with a community center. We took a trip 2.5 years ago visiting other communities that have been very successful in putting people into smaller homes with a community center where services can be brought to the people. We've been doing Safe Space, which is a project through the wintertime where we house people in local churches where we feed them. Hopefully they can have their animals because so many people have pets and are not really allowed into very many facilities, so we try and accommodate people with pets. We had... on average about 50 people a night last year in different churches on the floors with bedding, and we usually get them showers. We also have a master lease program. We have three facilities at this point, three homes that we have people in. We're looking for more. Actually, we're talking about buying one or two as well so we can put people into them where we would be the master lease holder versus renting from someone in the community, although we're always looking for people who are willing to rent to us so we can master lease out to homeless people and get them off the street. We're working on finding a place for homeless to store their personal belongings in the community because that's been such a real problem during the day, people having to carry their gear or leave it along a creek or under a bridge and have it be confiscated. We're working with other organizations looking for a wet shelter, a low barrier shelter during the day for people to get out of the rain because in almost all cases in our community, people are forced out early in the morning and have to spend their days on the street in the rain with cold weather, hot weather, whatever. We're also bringing Lloyd Pendleton, who is a Mormon who was in charge in Idaho of helping to cure the total blank here in my mind, in Utah, to cure the homeless problem in that community. They were very, very successful in getting most of the people off the street, especially those with drug and alcohol and mental problems. We're bringing him to town on October 10th, which is International Homeless Day, so we're working towards that particular goal at this point. Again, we're all volunteer organization. We're also working with the ACLU of Chico and Chico Civil Liberties Union and bringing a formerly homeless man, Mike Rhodes of Fresno, to Chico on August 28th and 29th, and he'll be speaking at Chico State and possibly some other places in the community. So that's some of the things that we're doing right now.
Thanks, Bob. Ed Mayer?
Hey, Bill, thanks. Always great to be here. Nice to see you. My name is Ed Mayer. I'm the Executive Director of the Housing Authority of the County of Butte. We're a local public agency serving Butte County. We administer federal and state rental assistance dollars, and in doing so, we serve about 3,100 households in Butte County at any one time. About 1,000 of those households we serve through the housing that we own and operate, located in Chico, Paradise, Oroville, Gridley, and Biggs. And then we also have rental assistance programs, which help subsidize people's rents. We also work with the homeless. We have a number of homeless programs that we work in partnership with Behavioral Health and the Esplanade House, operated by Community Action Agency, where we serve homeless individuals with special needs. So our business is housing, all things housing for low income.
Awesome, Ed. Charlie, welcome to the studio.
Hey, I'm Charlie. I'm excited to be here. I represent a bunch of the folks who use a lot of those services.
Awesome. Nice to see you, Charlie. And you're going to be playing some music for us and a song at the end, correct?
Well, if you want me to.
I do. We do. We sure do.
Okay, I brought my guitar.
I'm going to do a quick shout-out for tomorrow's show. You know, I was in San Francisco. I was really blessed. A lot of people came forward and helped me to do the travel expenses, and I was able to raise enough money to buy a new device, which I use extensively on the streets of San Francisco. But I've really been hustling here at the studio. I've got a show put together tomorrow that's pretty amazing. We're going to have solutions and perspectives for homelessness as far south as Los Angeles with Mel Tillicarty of Monday Night Mission, as far north as Seattle with Rex Holbein, the founder of Facing Homelessness in Seattle, and Gabrielle Duncan, who we've interviewed, a long-form interview about a year ago. She's just an amazing person, a Seattle homeless activist and artist. And we're going to actually play a little bit of her clip today on harm reduction. As far east as Tucson, one of my favorite people, Ron Austin, co-founder of the Carlos G. Figueroa Foundation. And we also have Northern California represented with Nezzy Wade. She's board member, a friend of mine, of AHA, Affordable Homeless Housing Alternatives. And they're based out of Humboldt County. And I had a wonderful interview with Bob Erlenbush. Not only is he the executive director of Sacramento Regional Coalition and Homelessness, he's on the national board as president for the Coalition to End Homelessness. And I just can't keep it going, but I just wrapped up an interview with William Burnett. He's the board of directors with might be the most recognizable name in the activism space. It's called Picture the Homeless, and they're from New York City. And so we're going to have all that on the show tomorrow. It's really going to be a cool show. But I wanted to tease some things up here. I got a perfect lead-in question for one of the panelists here, Ed Mayer, on the housing stuff. But this is just a wonderful, there's both a editorial piece written by Melissa Doherty of the CNR, and I believe it was called The List, but there's also a little infogram somewhere within the paper that kind of says this. Chico ranked 48th in a list of the countries 50th worst cities, as researched by 24/7 Wall Street, a Delaware-based online company specializing in financial news and opinion. Low wages, expensive housing, and the poverty rate were the dominant reasons the city made the list. The survey noted that Chico has a well-educated population. Almost 39% of the adults have a minimum of a bachelor's degree, compared to 34% nationally. Yet the median household income is $40,815 annually compared with the national median of $53,657. But here's the catcher here. Meanwhile, the median home price is $275,600, which is 6.8 times as much as household income. Home values across the U.S. are generally 3.4 times the median, so we're twice. And basically, we bookend with Boston and Palo Alto. So, Ed Merriman, what can you tell us about the situation here in Butte County and that wonderful opinion piece today in the CNR?
Well, that's a very interesting perspective on the county, but I think it captures some data which is interesting and can be spun a couple different ways. But the thing to understand about Butte County, we're rural and we're low income. And because we are far enough away from the Bay Area and the coastal zones of California, our housing is relatively affordable compared to the rest of California. But because we still operate in the same economy as the rest of the California, and we're in a rural economy, the economy is not that robust. So we end up with a situation where housing costs are relatively affordable, but the incomes available to pay for those housing costs simply aren't there. There's a disconnect between housing costs and wages. The interesting thing is that as much as this is a problem, as described in your editorial, in many ways, for those who live here in Butte County, it's the solution. Because what we see here in Butte County is a concentration of elderly and disabled households who are here for a very specific reason, because they can afford to be here. If you're a single elderly adult, you're probably receiving Social Security income to the tune of about $950 a month, which means you can afford, under normal circumstances, rent that would amount to about $350 a month. A single apartment in the Chico area is going to cost probably around $700, $750 a month. That still leaves $200 a month left over for these seniors or disabled to survive on, which is a whole lot better than them renting an $1,100 apartment in the Bay Area and having nothing left over. So while it is a challenge, this disconnect between available income and housing costs, at the same time, it's a relative to solution for many. So we see a concentration of elderly and disabled here in this county who are well served by our relatively affordable housing costs.
So it sounds like what you're trying to say, Ed, is people are coming in to take advantage of the fact that the economy is so, I'm not going to use the word depressed, but, well, it says it here.
I mean, Relatively speaking, yes.
Relatively speaking. And to me, that's going to put more pressure on the lack of housing we already have if people are coming in out of the area because they're retired knowing they can come here and live cheaper.
Not only that, but we also see that we have, like, I think, 1.2 vacancy rate. So there are no apartments out there, really, for people. Right.
And that's a little bit different function, but this idea that all the single-family homes are very expensive is in some ways a reflection of the desirability of this area. We have many people moving to Chico, come to school here. They don't want to leave. It's a wonderful lifestyle here. So there's that part of it that tends to inflate the local market. You have a beautiful local community.
Mm-hmm. So, well, thanks for all that dialogue around that. You know, what I think I'm going to do right now to get Jennifer kind of engaged in this is a really... Like I said, it's really been emotional for me. I mean, like I said, I knew Billy Abernathy really, really well. And I did this interview with him on the Esplanade about 3 years ago. And, you'll hear it from Billy Abernathy here on Without a Roof, People-Powered Radio.
I've been an alcoholic for quite some time. And the problem with alcoholics is that there's, on each and every corner or around the corner in Chico, there's a place where you can buy alcohol. Grocery stores, there's so many bars, there's so many liquor stores around, to where if you're an alcoholic and you're trying to quit and stuff, and if you have a little bit of money and you might be going through the shakes or what have you, you're going to stop in and get some relief. There's no program in Chico that's worth going to. Salvation Army sucks. Any of these other situations suck. If I was going to do it, first of all, I'd have a ranch way out to where the people cannot walk back into town. Mm-hmm. But they got to stay there and do some work and help feed maybe some, provide for yourself. Help feed the chickens. Have some steers that you can butcher. Pigs you can butcher. Give them something to do besides want to go out and get a drink. Not push all these programs on them like Salvation Army does. You have to go to this AA meeting, this NA meeting, this Bible study, this here, that there. A lot of people don't want to do that. And they're not going to, I mean, if you're an alcoholic, you're not going to want to do that.
We end this short segment with Billy describing sleeping outside his daughter's house and how he plays with his grandkids.
I like the situation that I'm in now because I drink less and I get to be with my grandchildren. We played baseball last night. Me and my grandson played baseball. I was pitching to him and he was hitting the ball hard. And I'm laughing and just having a great time. My daughter comes home. What are you doing, Dad? I go, we're playing baseball.
Oh, Billy, that's the best thing I heard all day.
I do have to add just a little more color to the story. I mean, I went to his wonderful, wonderful memorial service, and Billy raised a family. He has two kids that love him, and he was just revered throughout the entire community. He was just a wonderful, wonderful person that just was – he could not break alcoholism. He just could not break the throes of that. So, Jennifer, I'm really pleased to kind of get some introspect on that and with your expertise.
Thanks, Bill. You know – it breaks my heart. It makes me really emotional to hear his voice because what I'm hearing there is a disease of addiction. And, you know, I wish that we could harness his creative energy around some of the solutions that he was suggesting. I mean, wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't it be great if that was the way that we were helping people get clean, you know, and that were the solution? But what we're offering and what others are offering is evidence-based curriculum, you know, standardized treatment in a family setting and clinical practices that support treatment of the disease of addiction. And it breaks my heart that we have so many people struggling that aren't getting the treatment that they need. And what I heard from Billy is they aren't getting the treatment that they want. So treatment was available to him, but it wasn't what he was seeking. And that's really difficult. You know, this is a personal choice. It's a personal choice to make a change in your life. It's a personal choice to step onto the path of long-term recovery. And, you know, without that initial initiative personally, it's just, you know, no program is going to be successful for you.
Mm-hmm. Charlie.
I don't know if it's really a case of treatment that he wanted as much as it is needed. I don't think that treatment should be based around religion or viewpoints like that, and so it's not fair to say that someone didn't want it because they didn't want something like that pushed upon them.
Yep, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, it's one of the things that we really embrace at Skyway House is the freedom to choose your recovery path. So we're not choosing it for you. While we will support any social support mechanism that you choose to help you in long-term recovery, we're not choosing a religion, a social organization. We're allowing you to choose that and support you in that path. So that's really important to us. Yeah. We don't want anybody to find a reason to separate themselves. You know, this is all about working together to find the solution.
Agreed.
Maybe we could, just a quick question for the panel. I mean, maybe talk a little bit about something I see a lot is, you know, if you can look at some of the movie stars and the drug and alcohol treatment they can get whatever they want. But the poorer you are, the less opportunity you have to quote-unquote choose your program. And I just see Billy nailed it. He's like, I got no money, and this is the solutions they give me. And he used the word suck a couple of times. I mean, what could you kind of add to that, Jennifer, this whole disparity between I have no money and an addiction, and it kind of pushes them into a place they can't move out of versus I got plenty of money and I've got plenty of means?
Well, I think we're actually talking about a much bigger issue, which is, you know, what does healthcare look like in this country? Yeah. Because that's what we are, is part of the healthcare system. And there is a major disparity there between those who have and those who have not. And so the reality is that there are probably more services available to someone who has zero resources than somebody who has a little bit. And so that's an interesting perspective. There are the movie stars who can go to a certain level of rehab. There are middle class who really have very few options, and then there are those without any resources. And there are a lot of options available, albeit they may be faith-based programming, which we're all familiar with. There are a lot of those in this community.
Yeah, when I think about a lot of those programs, there's certain realities that come to play. One is that you're expected to be certain places at certain times. You don't have the vehicles to do it. You don't have the money to do it. Many times you're sick. So they don't really work. I mean, some of the things I've discovered for myself with working with homeless people is, even like when we're putting people into a home, we're allowing them to make the decisions as to who they want to live with, how they want to live, versus us telling them, because we realized there was resistance. Well, I don't want to live with that person, but we want you to live with that person. So we're discovering that the more opportunity you give people to make decisions on their own that are healthy decisions, the better the outcome will be. And again, another thing that we're doing is we're helping people to get to their meetings. We're saying, okay, you want to drive? We'll drive you there. We'll make sure that you get there. But you want to set up that meeting. You're responsible for doing that. We'll help in the end part of it, make sure that you're getting there on time. But for me, it's a real realization that most people out there in the street don't get the services they need. They can be dirt poor. They can have zero money. But in most cases, they're involved with the law, with the court, with jail, because they don't have the resources, the mental resources at that point, or the physical resources to change their life, even if they want to change it.
Yeah, thank you for that, Bob. I'm going to do some important stuff because we appreciate our guests here and our listeners, but you know, People Powered Radio is powered by people out there listening, and underwriters like made possible generous contributions of KZFR supporters in Urban Design Solar, a local solar contractor. Tired of phone calls with big box solar companies? Urban Design Solar can show you how a local company can provide answers to your solar questions at 809-1079. Urban Design Solar specializes in residential, commercial, and agricultural solar services. For no cost estimate and energy analysis, you can reach Urban Design Solar by calling 809-1079. And by Grocery Outlet of Chico, independent owner and operated, Chris Hotsletter brings locally grown and produced items as well as fine brand names and groceries, housewares, health and beauty products, or including organic and fine wines and more. Chico Grocery Outlet is open from 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. Monday through Friday, and 8 p.m. till 9 p.m. on weekends, 2157 Pillsbury Road next to Kmart. Find them on Facebook and at groceryoutlet.com. If listeners just tune in, listen to Guillermo Mash Without a Roof Show. This month we have Jennifer Carvello from Skyway House. We got Bob Trouch from CHAT, Chico Housing Hashing Team, and Ed Mayer from the Housing Authority of Butte County. And wonderful young lady over here is going to end the show with a song, Charlie, from It's in Stairways programming. But what I'm going to do right now, I've got a piece here that really kind of plays to both issues. They talk about harm reduction in the navigation centers and how the navigation centers are a gateway to try to get people into housing. So I'm going to listen to that and come back to our panel here on People Power Radio.
All this week, we've been reporting on homelessness. As part of the San Francisco Homeless Project, today, 70 different media outlets across the Bay are all talking about the crisis in our region and what to do about it. For our first story today, we're going to take a look at a new approach in San Francisco to move homeless people into housing, navigation centers. They're temporary residences designed to connect people with long-term housing and social services, but without separating them from their partners, their pets, or their belongings. The navigation center focuses on serving the long-term homeless population, people that have been on the street for 5 years or more and don't feel comfortable turning to the traditional shelter system. The first pilot navigation center was set up last year in the Mission. Yesterday, the city opened its second in the Civic Center, and the Board of Supervisors has unanimously approved a plan to open 5 more in the next 2 years. We recently received a question about that first navigation center through our crowdsourced collaborative reporting project, Hey Area. Listener Marilyn Herond wanted to know what's happened to all the people who've gone through the center since it opened. To help answer that question, KALW's Ben Trefney sat down with the navigation center director, Julie Ledbetter.
Let's say that I'm homeless and I'm living in a tent right near here, just down the street. And how do I end up getting into the navigation center? How do I get chosen for that?
So the navigation center is invite only. We don't have any wait list. And really what we do is we send the San Francisco HOT team, the homeless outreach team, out into the community. You could be next door to the Navigation Center, or you could be in Golden Gate Park, or you could be in the Excelsior. The HOT team is going to know you and know you pretty well and decide which cases are the most important cases to bring into the Navigation Center.
Well, let's go back to what this place is like. I mean, coming in, there's gates out front, and it's sort of I don't know, would you describe it as a compound? It's sort of like a gated space?
One of our recent clients who just came in said, "Wow, this is so wonderful. It's like Harvard for the homeless." So I don't think people experience it as a compound. I think they experience it as kind of a respite and a more of a sanctuary.
So if I come in, I'm welcomed, and what is the process like? How do you help me find shelter or help me deal with whatever my issues are that left me homeless in the first place?
So we really focus on housing here. And like I said, we have prioritized access to our city system of housing. So we place people in primarily SRO, single room occupancy hotels.
So if I come here, then do I meet with a case manager? Am I assigned somebody? Like, who do I start talking with?
Yeah, so day one can be a long day. You're really, asked by the HOT team to come in. You may or may not know the night before that you're going to get to make that change. The HOT team identifies folks, invites them, and then actually Public Works will go out with their trucks and bring people all of people's stuff. So they get a lot of assistance coming in. They get to bring all, everything that they have. And the HOT team will bring them. Then we register them briefly at the Welcome Center and then go straight into about an hour-long case management intake. And then directly from there, we connect them with the benefits program, so Medi-Cal, CalFresh, and CAP.
What if I come in here and I'm addicted to something? Like, what if I have, say, a heroin addiction, or I'm addicted to painkillers because life's painful? Then what? How does that work here at the Navigation Center, and how would that compare to, say, other shelter opportunities in the city?
System-wide, San Francisco's pretty good at being what's called harm reduction. So really focusing on people's behaviors, not on people's drug use. The times when we focus on it is when people want help with it or want to reduce the harms associated with their drug use. But in terms of our services, we don't have any expectation that people will stop using drugs. We don't allow drug use on site. If people are caught, we have, again, minimal consequences to that.
Like what?
We'll time people out for a couple days. We won't kick them out of the entire program because the goal is to really keep them engaged, right?
That's Julie Ledbetter. She's the director of the Navigation Center in San Francisco. So how do you help people transition from a life on the street through here into a housing situation in which, things are much more maybe organized and regimented, and they need to be responsible for different things in their new life?
I think a lot of the transition happens organically. People are really forced to be in survival mode when they're on the streets, and the decisions they're making make sense for that environment. And then when they come in here and they don't have to hustle for their food or what their basic needs are, you really see the sense of calm begin to transform just their sense of well-being, their attitude, pretty quickly the choices that they're making and the opportunities they see for themselves and they're able to pursue since they have the basic supports in place.
All right, we're back live on KZFR. I was outside. I was right next to where the quote-unquote one of the first Navigation Center, now they've opened two. But I did have to say that, not everyone that goes in the Navigation Center thinks they just showed up at Harvard. So I did have to say that there was a lady that I met at over at the Clarion Alley mural project that literally she had said that she feels unsafe there. She's around a whole bunch of people that are using. And as you'll hear in the next piece, it's like, how hard is it to quit using if you're around a bunch of users? She said if she leaves stuff out, people steal it. The thing that was poignant to me is she had a broken foot from being hit by a car. She had a big old boot on, but she said she only goes there like once or twice a week for a respite. But like I said, she did want to say, I think they're doing the very, very best they can. They do have city money where they're ramping up the quote-unquote, resources. But I don't want listeners here thinking that, oh, my God, look at this wonderful thing they got in San Francisco. It's stark. It's dingy. It looks like a compound. And the other thing I'll say before I turn it over, because I'm going to forget, I don't want to ramble on too much, but disproportionately African-American people. It was stunning. It just stuck out. Like, unbelievable, I would say. I won't even put a number, but it's just unbelievable how many African-Americans are homeless on the streets and hanging out, quote-unquote, hanging out in front of that navigation center waiting for it to open. So maybe I'll turn it over to you first, Charlie, to talk a little bit about, you know, how what you heard compares to the Stairways program, which you're familiar with.
The Stairways program is approaching it from a different angle than I'm used to seeing, you know. A lot of people that I know still use. I was homeless in Chico for a good deal of time and across the nation, different states, different parts of the country, for the better part of 12 years. And I have struggled with my fair share of addiction, and I've seen a lot of different programs, and I've tried in different ways to change my life a couple of times, and never until recently did any of the times I tried to change amount to anything, as I didn't have the means, the security, the trust in the people around me to do that. And Stairways, they're coming at it like not coming from above you, they're not coming from behind you, they're not coming from in front of you, they're coming from next to you. People who you're working with there, they want you to achieve your goals, you know, and they're patient. They're patient people. The idea that if you mess up and you relapse or you come home high, you got to leave, that's not the way it goes. You come home high, you get in trouble, you know. They talk to you about, this isn't something that I do. I've been clean for like a year and some change off bad drugs. I'm a mom. I do well. But I see a lot of people who are from the program because I go there sometimes. You know, I've met people who live there on the main site, and it's not easy to quit doing drugs. And not having a place to quit at is hard. And I have seen some good things happen because of these people.
Yeah, I have to say, you know, a little bit of the journalist in me, there's been a lot of stones cast at the Stairways programming for some articles that were printed, some words that were said by the director, or the fact that, you know, rich people are the ones that are paying the bills, and it's just unfortunate, you know. And
in my opinion, whoever wants to help pay the bills should not be frowned upon, and they shouldn't be frowned upon for accepting the help.
But I can say, Charlie, your story, and the first time I did an interview, I actually was in tears because I saw like three or four people in Stairways that I was like, oh my God, I'm so happy you're here, because they had no other alternative. So in many, many ways, since I've been to Stairways, I've been to the outside the Navigation Center, it's very, very similar, you know. And I think in a way it's much more open and friendly at Stairways than it would be in this kind of like a gymnasium kind of setting at Navigation Center. But I just want to point that out because I'm, you know, I do a lot of journalism up and down Northern California, and we should be embracing the fact that we have a harm reduction program in Chico, California, that's taking folks that have nothing in their pockets, that are living under a bridge, shooting heroin, and giving them a place to be. So people that want to throw stones at that, pick another subject. So, Jennifer, what would you say to this, the Navigation Center and the harm reduction stuff? You got some?
You know, harm reduction is interesting for us. I mean, I have to say, I'm coming from the treatment side. So if people come to us wanting long-term recovery, that's what I'm there for. We're there to teach them the tools and help them deal with the trauma that caused the disease with them in the first place. And so harm reduction for us is an interesting thing. You know, if the goal is to stay abstinent, that's one thing. If harm reduction is the goal, then that's another. We see clients who come in who may be homeless, addicted to heroin, unemployable, have lost everything. And if abstinence is the goal, that may be really difficult. But if we can get them housed, if we can get them off heroin, but maybe they're still drinking, you know, that's a harm reduction model that I'll embrace. Mm-hmm. It's about the behavior, as I heard before. So, you know, I think that that's major steps in the right direction.
Yeah, it's crazy. A young kid on the street, man, he was all upset. 21. He just quit doing meth. He's like, oh my God, he's 20. They just raised the cigarettes to 21. That's what he was substituting methamphetamines for, was doing cigarettes. So it's a tough road to hoe. You know, Bob, I'd like to hear from you a little bit about, you know, the Navigation Centers. I see a lot of parallels to what you guys do, that wonderful safe space that you guys do in the winter program. But I'm really looking forward to hearing from you, Bob.
Well, safe space for me is something that I think the community should be taking on. We're a volunteer organization, and it takes a lot of our time and energy. We love doing it. This is our fourth year. But I do wish that the community would step up more to help us in what we're doing. I mean, when you talk about 50 people a night, feeding 50, housing 50, many times 5 to 10 animals are part of it. It's an undertaking. We love doing it, but it's a real undertaking. And the people who come there obviously are quite appreciative. Many of those people now are out of homelessness because of us starting our master lease program, and so they moved into that part of it. Going back to harm reduction and housing first, there's a real correlation. They've done some studies of people that have been moved into housing, mentally ill, all kinds of problems, drug, alcohol problems, and they found that the people that move into housing have a dramatically increased success rate versus those who are put into programs to help them with their mental illness or their drug addictions or alcohol addictions. And it was a small study, 226 people, but it was overwhelmingly showed that housing first, that model, works. Getting people into a home and then working with them works in all aspects of recovery. And we're seeing that with the houses that we have people in. We're being very successful at this point, extremely successful in having people looking to change their life, demanding of the group, the homes that they're in, that everyone stays dry in those homes. They're doing it on their own. So it's really, an incredible picture of how important Housing First is, and that our federal government has switched to that program. And now we need in our communities to take that on.
One thing I wanted to follow up, Bob, because what you said was right on the money. The community needs to step up, and communities includes elected officials.
Yes.
Tomorrow, if you tune into the program tomorrow, you're going to hear a bunch of programs, man, where the cities, the counties are coming up with money and resources to do this stuff. And I'm a little frustrated with what's going on in Chico.
I am, too, because if you look at we just got a report two days ago from Yuba County, where Yuba County has purchased 40 buildings, 40 small buildings from Home Depot, and is putting 40 people into them, and they're going to be giving them services. We need to be looking at that in our own county and our own city to do programs like that to get people out of homelessness, get them back on track, giving them an opportunity to reintegrate into society.
Thank you, Bob. Ed Mayer, Housing Authority of Butte County, what do you think about all that? I know there's a lot to bite off there, but...
Well, I could say a lot about a lot, but a couple of direct thoughts. First of all, we're human beings. We're talking about a human community, whether the Chico community or the greater human community. And human beings have a few essential needs in order to be human: food, clothing, and shelter. And when human beings lack any one of those three, it's really hard to be human. So this idea of housing is really central as a foundation to our development as human beings. And the idea that we're talking about is housing first. And we're also talking about these navigation centers. In many of the service agencies around Butte County, they all function as gateways for the homeless. Whether we come into contact with the homeless because they come to a shelter, or whether we come in contact with them by means of the police or by some other outreach method, there's many ways we come in contact with the homeless. The game then is, what do we do? And if you can, the very first thing to do is put them in a house. And then the next thing you do is blanket them in supportive services so they can move forward with their lives, whether it's a collective supportive service program or an individualized one. Many different flavors, many different sizes. Our homeless population is very complex, so many possible solutions. This idea of the coordinating centers, though, is really important. That we, once someone's homeless, they're operating on a survival basis. You bring them into a shelter, you bring them in. There has to be some kind of transition into what we call a normalcy. We're trying to invite citizens who are living in the informal society into our formal society, and we all need to work together to do this. I think in communities that have been successful in doing this across the country, universally have the politicians involved in that they stand up and say, not in my community. We say no, and we are going to work to end this, because it is a solvable problem. Yeah. It's a problem that involves the distribution and allocation of resources. And it's a political piece that has to play to meet with success. Now, in Butte County, we've seen a lot of success. And please don't underestimate the amount of homeless we have served and taken off the streets. Unfortunately, between federal, state, and local assistance, we are only able to serve probably 1 in 5, and that is difficult. Between 1 in 3 and 1 in 5 is who we serve. So there's a huge chunk of those who need service, who are our citizens, who we want to bring in, and we much rather pay attention to them as constructive citizens than we would as criminals, that we need to do this.
I talked earlier about Lloyd Pendleton, that we're bringing him, or trying to bring him, on October 10th, International Homeless Day. And we're going to be doing a study beforehand to show a cost analysis of how much the savings is per person to put someone into housing versus having them living on the street and being interacting with the police, interacting with the courts, interacting with jail. So we're trying to do a cost analysis benefit to show how important it is for our city officials to get behind this, because it saves money. You can't see it just if you look at the police department, or just look at the hospital, or just look at the courts. But if you look at the whole picture, you realize how much money is saved by housing someone and bringing services to them.
And just to tie into what Robert's saying, our understanding these days in our area is that it costs about $20,000 a year to house someone and provide supportive services to get someone off the street. Right. About $20,000 a year. On the streets, we think, based on national averages, they're costing somewhere in the neighborhood of $45,000 to $55,000 a year. So there's some strict economics at play here, much less just this idea of civilization, which we'd like to promote.
And that's why we're bringing Lloyd again, because we want to show the economics. Many times that's the winning ticket. It's not the – we see right now the city mothers and fathers don't seem to be as concerned as we are about housing people and getting people off the street and giving them an opportunity. But if we can show them possibly the cost analysis of how much the city can save, then maybe we can move people forward, the politicians forward.
All right, once again, we're going to do some underwriters here, and thanks again for our panel. The Without a Roof programs made possible generous contributions to KZR supporters and by Friends of the Arts, state local partner to the California Arts Council. Since 2001, Friends of the Arts has been creating economic opportunity through arts and culture by producing community festival and events, including Artoberfest, Chico Palo, True North Toro, Silent Film Festival, NorCal Jazz Festival, and Salmon Festival, and more. To learn more about the Friends of the Arts, visit friendsoftheartsupstate.org and by Oak Ridge Cabinets, Northern California's full-service manufacturer of custom cabinets since 1981. Oak Ridge Cabinets offers cabinet design and manufacturing for your home or office at 111128 Midway in Durham. More information available by calling 893-8774 and at oakridgecabinets.com. I'm going to play another little vignette and bring it back to the panel, but this one's a real cool one because I know Gabrielle Duncan said she's going to be listening in tonight. So this is Gabrielle Duncan kind of tying a few things together here. From the Seattle, Washington area on the Without a Roof program on People Powered Radio. All right, it's my distinct pleasure here, Guillermo Mash for KZFR 90.1 FM, People Powered Radio. We have on the line Gabriella Duncan from Seattle, Washington, whom I did a wonderful long-form interview about a year ago, Gabriella. It's nice to hear your voice again after this length of time.
Yes, it's been good to see what you're up to and watching your posts and things.
This little segment, as I mentioned, is about solutions to homelessness, and I know you're doing some wonderful, wonderful work up there in the Seattle, Washington area around harm reduction. So maybe you could kind of land on that and tell us about your program so we can promote that a little bit, or your project.
Well, I actually kind of, you know, have lived in a tent city and lived in, and walked with some, very closely with some friends who suffer from addiction, and I know a lot of people say it's a choice and yada yada, and really it isn't. After a while, it's managing illness. You're just managing symptoms that you created, and it's hard to understand how you could, you know, disconnect and get away from that once it's got a hold of you. And so there are safe consumption sites that Washington Vocal is putting up around the city where a person can go and get the fresh needles they need and be where they're in a safe injection site. It's not on public sidewalk. It's very respectfully treating human beings with an addiction. And so I'm working on an art piece that's going in there that is actually from real pieces of paper and a website that my daughter and I had kind of written called The Drug Zombie. And I no longer had the money to pay for it when I became homeless. But so I've taken excerpts out of that and then some of the actual factual things that have happened during their time of addiction, which really alerted me to the fact of how necessary it is to find a way to compassionately and completely help those who suffer from it, because it's hard to stay away from it if you're on the streets, and you can't get clean if you live with a bunch of people that aren't. And so it's complicated, and we push people out on the fringes like that, and then to try and get them into treatment has been a nightmare. I have walked the system and seen and heard the phone calls of people being told, yeah, 4 more weeks or 4 more months, or, and it's unreal to me as to how that works. I think people have a really unbalanced idea of how it is when you try to go get help. And so that's my biggest thing right now that I'm working on, is supporting the safe consumption sites and supporting safe drug use and the use of Narcan, having it on hand, knowing how it works, that sort of thing.
Because I really like what you said, Gabriella, about it's really hard to break your addiction if you're living with a bunch of people that are addicted. Tends to be, if you don't have any money and there's any kind of quote-unquote help available, they throw a whole bunch of people together that are addicted in a small living space and say, hey, figure it out. And, oh, by the way, if we test you dirty for drugs, you're out of here. And maybe you could speak
right,
to a little
it.
Bit of how stupid that process is.
Right. It just feeds the system more. It almost looks like it is made so that recidivism is a guaranteed thing. Guaranteed.
Well,
when you have to live like that.
The other thing that this wonderful young lady that I spoke with yesterday had mentioned, she said, you know, recovery is all about, you know, relapse. And not all about, I don't think that's the exact phrase, but she said, if you're in recovery and you're a serious drug or alcohol addict, you're going to have relapses. So I think it's really inhumane to bring people into programs and then kind of call them in the office going, sorry, you passed your P-test, go back living under the bridge. It just doesn't make any sense at all.
I think that's a punitive model that doesn't work. It's ineffective with adults, and with behavioral studies and things that I kind of, you know, when I start to get curious about something, I read as much as I can get my hands on, you know, regarding that subject. And then plus being a treatment foster parent and being trained in crisis intervention, you know, you begin to see how nurturing and patience are more necessary than anything at the point of absolute addiction. Because things happen, right? I mean, I suffered through a lot with my children as they suffered because I chose to go with it, through it with them. I chose to stay present. I chose to try every avenue I could possibly get my hands on to try and help them in some way. For instance, going down and getting them a safe needle use card and then having a police officer tear it up and say, well, that's not good here. You know, and so you see how on one side of the system it's all very lopsided. It's very lopsided and people are hurting. The average drug addict is not an older gentleman anymore. It's a high school student. And would you take that high school student and give up on them when they've only lived 15 years of their life? You know, it takes a lifetime to accumulate that experience and whatnot. That should tell you right there that there's a problem because that person is that young and they're already medicating for some reason or another.
All right, we're back live in the studio with our panel. And what's fun about the panels, I've done this a few times, is right now we're still doing it. They're having a sidebar discussion, and we've had some really neat discussions with our three guests. Once again, Jennifer Carvello from Skyway House Rehabilitation Centers, and Bob Trouch from CHAT, which is helping to house people, Ed Mayer from the Housing Authority, housing people, and Charlie from Stairways Programming. And Charlie was going to talk a little bit about the needle exchange that Gabriella from Seattle just spoke to.
I'm waiting for like a cue. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. You're up.
I think that a needle exchange, as much as people want people to not do. I don't do drugs anymore. And that's something that I could have prevented for myself had there been place and access to things that I needed when I was doing it. And also, like, no one likes to, like, all the people who, many people who are homeless don't do drugs and don't drink, just don't have the resources and are mentally disabled or have their other mental issues. And it's really uncomfortable to wake up and to see things that you don't want to see, like rigs.
Yeah.
Just because you're homeless doesn't mean you have a drug problem. And if you don't, you certainly do not want to wake up to those things, like where you're sleeping, where your dog's walking around, where, what if there's holes in your shoes and you step on a rig that, and you get some kind of, it's all bad. Needle exchanges are the jam. Whether or not you agree with drug use, you should agree with people being safe.
And along that line, we're hearing stories, unfortunately, that already the bathrooms downtown in the evening are being used by people who are shooting up. And we really need to hire someone from the city, needs to hire someone to be down there to monitor the use of those bathrooms. We need them desperately, but we need them to be able to be available for the people who need them, not for people who want to be shooting up.
Yeah, that's a good point, Bob. Kind of reached the point in our segment. We got about 12 minutes left. We're going to try to fit in a song. So do the circle back. Maybe start with you, Jennifer. Is there anything that you'd like to share with the audience maybe you haven't mentioned or expand upon something? I'd love that.
Yeah, as you were saying, we've been having a lively conversation here when we've got your pieces playing. And, you know, Skyway House is here for treatment resources for addicts who are seeking long-term recovery. That's what we do. Mm-hmm. And we've always made that available to the community in the best possible way. And, you know, for many years, we've had a relationship with Torres Community Shelter offering scholarships to their clients for outpatient services. And I wish more would take advantage of that. You know, we really do want to be a solution in the community. And it's been wonderful being here tonight and talking with these guests, because it opens my eyes to other ways that we may be able to engage and provide solutions for treatment resources. So, you know, I hope the conversation continues. Isn't that what community radio is all about, is continuing that conversation?
Thank you, Jennifer. Bob Charles?
I'd like to talk about tiny homes. Ed was talking about, and it's a very, very realistic figure, $20,000 to house someone versus $45,000 to keep them in jail and through the court systems and interaction with police. And if you take into consideration hospitalization, which we see with Safe Space, how many people we end up taking to the hospital to come there with pneumonia, injuries, all kinds of, you know, diseases. Tiny homes, we can build a tiny home for $7,000 to $8,000. When I put together that trip to make a film 2.5 years ago, it was amazing to see places. And we visited 5 different communities. One has been going for 14 years. And the different types of structures that they had, the different types of some of them had bathrooms in the tiny homes, some didn't. But all of them were self-governing, which was really important. There was outside help, but there was self-governing, which gave them the ability to care about themselves, make rules for themselves, to uphold those rules. And many times they were much more strict than we would have been, making sure that everyone was safe in their community. And I think we need to look at that model. Not everyone can afford. I can't remember what the figure was, $270,000 for average home in Chico.
275.
Yeah. Most people can't afford that in Chico with the amount of income that they have if you're looking at $40,000 a year income.
Right.
I agree that is not a lot of money compared to the rest of the state, you know, the cost of homes. But if you can't afford one, you can't afford one. Whereas if you build a tiny home that becomes someone's safe space, where they have a roof over their head, they have storage, they have a place to sleep, they have a heat and cool, and a community center where they can have all the other facilities, showers, food, kitchen, bathroom, all of those things, laundry. We can do that in our community. We've seen very successful communities across this country. There's 200 of them going up in Madison, Wisconsin. There's 200 going up in Texas. They're building these across the country. As I said earlier, Yuba County is close. We'll have to get down there, Bob.
20
units with 40 people being pulled out of homelessness. We need to look at that in our own community. We have to change the hearts and minds of our city fathers and mothers to make sure that that happens.
I'm going
to
have you back on and just talk about tiny homes, Bob. Thank you so much for that. I really, really appreciate it. Thanks. Ed Mayer?
Bad news and good news. Bad news, we see chronic homelessness getting worse. It's not getting better over time, so this is an issue that's very important to us all if we're to enjoy a community. But the good news is it is a solvable problem, and it is a matter of political and community will and distribution of resources. So the good news is as much positive is happening in Chico and in Butte County. We'd like to think that we're moving in the right direction, but it is an enormous challenge in the face of maybe the most defining problem of our times.
Right, and we also know, just to jump in quickly, we also know that the sooner you get someone out of homelessness and into a home, the more successful they're going to be. That the success rate dramatically increases. And when you have chronic homelessness, it takes a lot more services and time to reintegrate those people into society. So the sooner we act, the sooner we get people into homes, the more success we're going to see.
Thank you, Bob. Charlie, do you have a few more comments?
I'm sure that I'm supposed to, but honestly, whenever you talk to me, I kind of draw a blank, get nervous.
How about some music?
Yeah, we got some music coming up. That's a good call, Bob. I want to thank all of our our guests, Jennifer from Skyway House, Bob from Chico Housing Action Team, Ed Mayer from the Housing Authority, and Charlie from Stairways Programming. She's grabbing her guitar. She's got a guitar. And I'm going to start one of her songs that she gave us a CD, so we have something playing in here and we don't have dead air on People Power Radio.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Fuck you, Pete.
Aha! Gotcha. And me. My legs, I need to change my name. Empty out my pockets, get my shoes away. Need to write down everything I thought I knew. Send it all to Timbuktu. Sunday, mama, you soggy sink. You got your polka dot umbrella keeping out the rain. A Mona Lisa smile and a wreck like Mary. Singing the blues like a caged canary. She sounded so sweet, I left my toys behind. Now I'm playing with a shoestring and a bottle of wine. It's been too long, we've been stepping in time. So take your problems to bed, and I'll take mine. I need to stretch my legs, I need to change my name. Empty out my pockets, give my shoes away. I need to write down everything I thought I knew. Send it all to Timbuktu. I'll get a brand new start. I'm gonna build an ark full of blue giraffes and chocolate hearts. Sail out of this cardboard town. Close my eyes and let my ship run aground. I'm gonna shoo-dee-doo wake up on some distant shore. I rub the sand from my eyes next to some floozy whore. Find truth and shame, knock on a random door. And give them all the sentimental things a lone man can't take no more. The moon, a drink from a red wine. See, tell them I became a monk somewhere. I'll never speak and cut off all my hair. Whatever you say to them, remember to tell them that I'm not here. Cause I need my time alone. A stiff drink of whiskey and a chicken bone. The blues on tape, a cheap guitar, and a couple good books to read. Someday I might change my mind. Go back to running around all of the time. Then I'll be sitting in the land of Nod, happily losing my mind. I need to stretch my legs, I need to change my name. Empty out my pockets, give my shoes away. Need to write down everything I thought I knew. Send it all to Timbuktu. I need to stretch my legs, I need to change my name. Empty out my pockets, give my shoes away. Need to write down everything I thought I knew. Send it all to Timbuktu. Gonna send it all to Timbuktu. Gonna send it all to Timbuktu.
All right, we got Charlie in the house. It's kind of cool, man. We got Bob Charles. He does everything, man. He's helping with the microphones. Jennifer's taking pictures. Ed's taking pictures. This is live radio, people-powered radio. You're going to hear Charlie, man. She's awesome. She was on Studio 416 with Brad Peterson and Mickey a few weeks back. But give it up for Charlie. What do you got for us, Charlie?
This song was written by the same person you were just listening to. He wrote this when he was homeless several years ago, and I played it at the Stairway Shalom for Clinic Benefit that my case manager went to or played in.
Awesome. Thank you.